This episode of Sacktown Talks is brought to you by Elk Grove Power Sports, California's premier power sport dealer. Elk Grove Power Sports has the brands you know and trust like Can-Am, Vespa, Sea-Doo, Moto Guzzi, and many others. They offer easy financing and take trade-ins too. Stop daydreaming about that recreational vehicle you've had your eye on and schedule your test drive today. More information at egpowersports.com. This episode is also brought to you by ESAC BJJ, Sacramento's newest Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Academy. Each one of my students is a working professional, a full-time student, a mother, or a father. My students balance many commitments to make time to practice BJJ, which is why I am committed to fostering a positive and inclusive environment at ESAC BJJ. Adult classes as low as $75 a month, and we offer children's classes too. More information at ESACBJJ.com. I'll see you there.
One. What's up? It's another episode of Sacktown Talks. I'm here with the original gangster of soccer in Sacramento, Joe Wagner. How you doing, my man?
Doing all right. All right. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming by. So, you know, this is kind of cool. Just kind of how, like, my vision for the podcast was like, hey, you know, I'll just start with a couple of talks and, you know, we'll see how this thing goes. And as people see it, they'll share it. And as people share it, other people will like it. And I'll just kind of pick from there who...
Sure.
Who might want to come on and who might be an interesting, you know, who might have an interesting story to tell. So I saw that. I think you liked the video with like Lin Fei Fei.
Yeah.
Completely. And I was like, oh, shit, this is the guy from Sac. This is the founder of Sac Republic, right, a co-founder. Right. I was like, I always wanted to kind of like, you know, reach out to you all. But it's so hard to just like send like a cold email.
You know?
So yeah. I was like, oh, hey, you just liked this thing online. You might want to come on. And here you are.
Yeah, well, here we are. No, that was a fantastic show, by the way.
Thank you.
We're so lucky and proud to be partnering with her. She came out and was part of that first Paint in the Park event that we had. And then she's gracious enough to let us use her design to make a scarf. And I think they're coming in 3 weeks. And it's awesome. Story is really cool.
How can I get a scarf?
Well, we'll take care of you.
We
got to put it up in the back. All right.
Yeah, I mean she sent me this print right here too.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and dude, she's like, hey, so did you have to tell her like, hey, like let's try not to have like a zombie soccer mom chomping on a kid's skull?
You know, it's funny because there were there were 30 some artists that came out, and you know, all different styles and types, and you see their stuff, and you're like, wow, it's like she's super talented. I'm gonna go learn about her, and you see the other stuff, you're like, whoa, that's that could have gone a way different direction. She's super talented. She took it easy.
Yeah, it's like no blood and guts,
please. Yeah. Absolutely.
Hey, so yeah, no, she was one of my favorite episodes, just because like kind of how real she keeps it. And then like David Garibaldi as well, and then you know, maybe lesser known, but I think I actually really enjoyed Richard Munoz more.
Yeah.
He's a LGBT artist, and he's got these like really striking portraits that are kind of dark and spooky as well.
Absolutely.
And he does a really good job. And Keith Cromie over at Apothic Heart Tattoo Company, who I just wanted to get one of the kind of like the freaks and geeks, like, you know, in the tattoo world. And
They're so talented. Absolutely.
Man. I mean, talk about like, hey, there's no... You've got zero room for error here, man. This is going on my neck.
Yeah. If there's time, I have a bad tattoo story, and I have a bad tattoo. And so, yeah, you're right. If you're doing it right, there is no room for error. And if you do, you have what I have.
Let's just hear it. I mean,
so college, junior year, I played baseball. Okay. And so it was my first year not playing baseball, but I still lived with a bunch of baseball players. And we were doing what kids do in college, and it was late at night, and everyone's like, hey, let's go get our team logo put on our arms. And I'm like, guys,
you know, easy guys.
Yeah, it's like we're NAIA, we don't even like we love the game, but you know, it's like you really want to have that live on your shoulder for the rest of your life. And I go, all right, if you're dumb enough to do that, I was kind of the hippie guy. I went to college in Nebraska. It doesn't take much to be a hippie in Nebraska.
You have to be like a Democrat.
That's exactly right. I'm like, if you go do that, I'm going to go get peace signs and happy faces with the phrase choose to be happy on my ankle.
Yeah.
And we continued the night, and there was a tattoo parlor that opened up like two blocks from where we lived. And it couldn't have been accredited. There's no way this guy could have been certified. We go in, and we're all biting on towels, and we woke up in the morning with a bunch of bandages around. They have it on their arm, and I woke up with it around my ankle.
Oh,
and,
my goodness.
And I took it off, and there's a mistake. And, you know, there are a couple times that I looked at getting it covered up. It's like, you know what? I was in a point where I was like, I'm going to get happy faces put on my ankle with, you know, this love everybody type of thing. And, you know, every morning I wake up, it's like, you know what? It's okay. It's okay. Choose to be in a good mood. It's your choice. And, but yeah, I'll show you the thing later on. I got a, he did not space it out right. So I have like a Siamese, I have two heads that conjoined.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
That's so funny. I was just on a river flow, floating down the American River from Sunrise to Bradshaw.
Yeah.
And my friend had this, like, she had like this, these like dots like around her ankle. I was like, what's going on? And she's like, what is this? I thought it looked like an injury or something. She's like, oh no, like I'm getting this tattoo removed.
Oh.
And I'm like, what is it? And she's like, oh, it's a rosary. I was like, okay. Oh, you're getting the rosary removed. Yeah. So I was like, you know, and she's like, no, I'm still Catholic. It just wasn't done very well. Maybe I'll get another one, you know.
But sure.
No room for error, man. Keith Cromie puts these, you know, just a quick shout out, man. Yeah. He puts these pieces on people that are just fantastic. He calls it trash polka.
Trash polka.
Yeah. So that's he'll have like a cool like silhouette, and then he'll throw like a blood splatter over.
That's
it or something,
fantastic.
You know? It's so cool.
No, they're so talented. Absolutely.
So hey, I wanted to have you on and just sort of the conversation I was hoping to have was a little bit about you personally. Probably the most, I think the most direct line of storytelling we can get to sort of how Sac Republic came to be.
Sure.
And from what I've read just in sort of, you know, stalking you a little bit, to get ready for this talk is that you've been a professional teams manager and business manager for the entirety of your career, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you spotted an opportunity to, you know, like, hey, this is a market that's ripe for professional soccer.
Right.
Someone's going to do it. Why not me? Is that right?
Yeah. It's you're giving me more credit actually. So yeah. that I deserve. So I'd been in sports. I got into sports in 1998, 1999. Before sports, I worked in advertising. And so, I was working for an advertising agency in Chicago, and it's called J. Walter Thompson. It was a big one. And you're on Michigan Avenue. And you know, I'm from a small farm town in Illinois. So if you go up rural Illinois, like the goal is to make it to Chicago, whether you're a bus boy or, whatever it is, if you can make it there,
you've made it.
And so my goal was to make it to Chicago. Pardon me. And so I'm there. And it's like Mad Men, you know. It's the all those things that happen on Mad Men are real. And I had this we had this account, and it was this craft product, and we spent like $72 million on
craft singles.
Exactly, craft singles. And so we spent $72 million
selling cheese,
selling cheese, man. and one day my boss comes in and she goes, hey, let's go have a bunch of beers. I'm like, that sounds awesome. Why? And she goes, well, our lives are fulfilled. I'm like, okay, why is that? She's like, cheese sales are up 0.002% in Ohio.
No.
And I was like, that's what we're doing this for? And yeah. She was an awesome lady. But she's like, listen, that's the gig. That's how we find fulfillment. And I'm like, so my
that's when you were like, no thanks.
Getting up in the morning is based on, you know, my happiness is based on an extra, you know, mom buying an extra thing of cheese, you know, in Dayton.
Of craft
and,
over
yeah,
there.
And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I need a little generic bit more than that. So I wrote a letter to every NFL team, every NBA team, every Major League Baseball team, everything there was, and about 200 minor league baseball teams. So you're talking, you know, it was a ton of letters.
And, like 300 letters.
Yeah, and one called back.
Hey, that's all you need.
Yeah, that's it.
That's all you need.
And before you know it, I was selling tickets for the Sioux Falls Canaries, an independent baseball team in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And that was the thing, is the immediate gratification of, you know, it's instead of a mom buying cheese in Dayton, which I don't interact with and I really don't care, you know, where it's like in baseball or in sports, I mean, it's people come in a bad mood and they leave in a good mood. You get a chance to connect with the community.
Yeah.
So I know I'm taking the
No, this is good.
The long route here. Apologizing.
Hey, drink water. That's what we're here for.
Did it. Loved it. You know, it's started selling tickets because that's kind of how you have to learn about the business. And the way you learn about the business is really by selling tickets. And then the director of promotions left about 3 months after I was there. So these small teams, you know, you take over promotions and you take over marketing and then you take over sponsorships. So eventually I'd been there for 4 years and was learning how to run a small team. And then a friend of mine moved out to California, and he called one day. He's like, "Hey, the River Cats are looking for a salesperson to sell sponsorships." And the River Cats were doing like 10,000 a night, and we were averaging like 2,000 or whatever. They were the largest. They were actually outdrawing some Major League Baseball teams. And so,
Everyone's at the River Cats game here.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Man. And so I moved out here in 2002 and fell in love with Sacramento, and I was here.
Oh, so you moved here before there was like a De Vere's, you moved here when there was like one club.
It's funny because it's like, hey, why should I come to Sacramento? They didn't have to sell me. I wanted to work for them really bad. Yeah. But they're like, listen, hey, you're an hour from Tahoe. You're an hour from Reno. You're, you know, close to San Francisco. You're near wine country.
You're close to a bunch of other shit.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And I think that's the beautiful thing about how this has evolved and being lucky enough to come here in 2002, where it's like, now it's about us. We're getting our own voice. We're standing on our own. And shit, we'd rather be in Sacramento than any of these other places. But so baseball was my thing. I played in college for a couple years. I was working in baseball and River Cats, and I went and ran a single A affiliate of the Cubs in Illinois, and then a single A affiliate of the A's north of Chicago. Came back, Modesto, they have a single A club there. And eventually I got a call, and it was like, hey, there's a minor league football team starting in Sacramento. It's a startup. Do you want to
get involved?
It was the Mountain Lions.
Yeah.
It was great. Denny Green was the head coach.
Dante Culpepper sent me and my table like a back when the barbecue joint by CSU, back when it was Beasley's.
Yeah. Oh, we did a lot with Beasley's. Absolutely. Yeah,
back when it was Beasley's, that was the only place you could watch the UFC fights.
That's right. He and Carmichael, they did a ton with that.
Yeah, and so I was out there one night, and it was the night that Frankie Edgar had dethroned BJ Penn.
Yeah.
BJ had reigned supreme. I mean, BJ was this like crazy Hawaiian warrior, man.
Absolutely.
He was like licking his opponent's blood off his gloves. like BJ is just like this crazy. BJ Penn was a rich kid who chose to fight for fun.
Wow.
Yeah. And I had like, I had been overserved. Yeah. I'd been overserved.
That happened there a bit. Yeah, quite a bit.
I had been overserved, and I was just losing my mind at this upset. And Dante Culpepper was like, "Hey, send that guy a bucket of beers."
That's fantastic.
That was my one Mountain Lion story.
Oh man, yeah. So it was my intro into startups, and so it's like, yeah. Hey, here's this thing. They handed us a white piece of paper and said, "Hey, you've got a franchise." And I wasn't an owner, but here's how you do it. You know, it was a lot of fun. You know, just taking nothing and turning it into something, and. There was about a 3-month break during the Mountain Lions reign where the league called and said, "Hey, we don't know if we're going to have a season. So you got to find something to do. You need to come to the office, but you just got to keep yourself entertained." And so for the first week, we drank beer and watched movies. And we're like, "Oh, this is the best." And then that gets pretty old after a while.
Real quick.
Yeah. I know. So the next week, we set up BB gun. Like we had trap. You know, we were shooting inside the office. And after a week, that even got boring. So it's like, you know what? Let's write a business plan, you know. So wrote one for hockey and one for soccer. And the soccer, we
made more sense.
Yeah, you know, we did our research, and it was like, okay, there's 100,000 people that play soccer in Sacramento. There's about 3,000 that play hockey. Ice Machine costs $1 million. Soccer's played on grass, and that's about as much as I knew. I'd followed the national team, but I wasn't really a soccer guy.
You're a sports guy.
I'm a sports guy. And so wrote that plan and called. There were two minor leagues and called, or two developmental leagues in professional soccer in the United States. Called them both. One called back, one didn't, and that's how we became a USL team as opposed to an NPS.
Were they already named Republic or
no? Let me go back. So in 2002, when I showed up my first night in Sacramento, I went to a buddy's house, and I worked with them, and there's. He had a friend. He's like, "Hey, come over. We'll have some champagne and beers, the Miller High Life on the side yard." And so I walk back there, and there's this guy just kicking a soccer ball against a wall. And I wasn't anti-soccer, but being in baseball, at that point in time, you'd seen a lot of outfield fences getting taken down to make room for soccer fields. And so my love, I'm like, this is a
little friction there.
Yeah. And so I walk back there and this guy's just, you know, sipping on a beer, kicking a ball against the wall. And I'm like, hey, I'm Joe. And his name is Jeremy Field. And he's like, hey, I'm Jer. And over the course of 10 years drinking beer, he's from Sacramento. He played for the Knights. He played overseas. And over the course of a couple of years, a guy named Sean Morrison, who was house it was, and he and Jer and I had some conversations, and it's like, hey, you know, soccer could happen. But Jeremy's thing was like, it can't be somebody that's currently within the soccer world.
Yeah.
Because it's so competitive, you know, there's about 32 competitive clubs, and it had been tried before, but it's really these different tribes that were trying to do it, and wasn't anyone that could really bring everybody together. So you almost needed someone that didn't understand the landscape and was from the outside, but knew the sports side, that could go, hey, we don't have alliances or allegiance to anybody except
new entrants. Don't bring baggage with them. Right.
Yeah. And so, wrote the plan, you know, fast forward, wrote the plan, a guy named Brett Ryder was involved also with the Mountain Lions, and all of a sudden it's like, hey, there's a league that's interested in us. And they
could
were.
Could you do me one favor? Just quickly, could you swing this a little bit closer to yourself?
Yeah, you bet.
That's good. That's good right there.
Is that good?
Yes, sir. All right, good.
Yeah, so the league was interested, and all of a sudden we realized that this could happen. I mean, just wrote a plan and was talking to people at the league and realized that we needed a face. We needed someone with some legitimacy. And so I went and had lunch with Warren Smith. And so mm-hmm. Warren is another co-founder of the club. And we went on St. Patrick's Day and had a bunch of beers at McCooney. And he thought it was a horrible idea. He wanted to open some sandwich shops. And I'm like, but there's 100,000 people that play. It's like, terrible idea. So over the course of the next couple months, probably took about 9 months to get him involved, but he came on and then we put our bid together.
Why'd it have to be him?
So he was co-founder of the River Cats.
Okay.
And I'd worked with him at the River Cats. And right at that point, the Mountain Lions had owed a bunch of people in town money. Some of the owners weren't, the league wasn't working out. But any time that sportscasters came to talk about why people weren't getting paid, my face was on there. I'm like, I
can't do this.
This isn't me, you know?
Yeah.
So it wouldn't have been good if I'd, you know, been the face of it. And actually in the meantime, I left the Mountain Lions, went and helped out a hockey startup in San Francisco and then came back. So it was two startups. And then they kind of had a better idea about how to do this. And so, Warren was involved, you know, he was pretty much the face of it. I was the behind the scenes guy. And there were a couple other folks that were involved, you know, Matt Ray, Tim Stallings, Kenny Cooper, they're these folks that are Sacramento people. And it was honestly a group of folks that just said, hey, you know, this is worth doing. And even a little bit deeper. So, you know, it made sense. The market was there, the product was there, but really when I moved here, again, I'm from the middle of nowhere, Illinois, there wasn't a lot. I came here and it's like, man, there's all these different types of people. You know, you go to a River Cats game, it's families, and maybe you're going there to have a beer, a hot dog. That's kind of it. Go to a Kings game, a little bit different, you know, maybe some more affluent folks, you know, some diversity.
Especially in the new arena.
Right, exactly. But at that point, you know, the World Cup was blowing up, and I sit there going, like, there's all these folks I don't understand. And if I'd taken my prejudices from where I was from, I wouldn't even give these folks a chance. But I was in a bar one day and we're watching World Cup. Landon Donovan scores and everybody, all sizes, shapes, mottos, they're like hugging each other and they're pouring beers on each other. I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, this, how do we do this? And so that was really, again, product made sense, things made sense, but the idea was, how do we get all these people that might not understand each other, that might not have a reason, that might even think they don't even like each other, to, you know, if you're walking toward the stadium, I'm seeing someone, I might think I don't even like them. We go in the stadium, you're pulling in the same direction. You know, outside the stadium, the only thing you have in common is you're from Sacramento, but you go inside the stadium and Sacramento versus somebody else. Now all of a sudden you're on the same side.
Yeah.
and now you're cheering for the same things. And you realize, like, shit, man, I'm way more similar to that person than I am different. And yeah. So whether you speak the same language or believe the same things or love the same people, who gives a shit? I mean, it's about, we all share a community and we all, I think, want pretty much the same thing. And that's, you know, it's be good to people, be good to your neighbor. And so we looked at, you could take movies, food, anything that there is. Soccer, honestly, is probably the only thing that could take all these different cultures, put people in the same space,
yeah,
and have them actually understand what was like. They all get it, and they all have a passion for it. I mean, the passion for this thing, I didn't get that either until we started going to other markets and looking at it. Like, that, I mean, we have a group called the Tower Bridge Battalion, and they're just fantastic. They're kind of like the
booster club, right?
Yeah, yeah. But don't ever call them a booster club. They are an independent supporters group, and they get super pissed. It's they don't like to be called the booster club. And they are definitely, you know, it's funny. We'd educate ourselves a lot. And so, you know, most sports have, you know, a fan club or a booster club.
Yeah.
Soccer has supporters groups, and they are completely independent. They won't wear sponsors. They don't go, hey, we're going to have a viewing party. They aren't your shill. They aren't there to be a voice for the club. They are there to support the crest, the movement, the team, but they are definitely not an arm of the front office. They're very, very vocal,
very clear about that.
About letting
it,
know.
Got it.
And, but again,
because they have they might have their own vision for how the club should go for things like the MLS bid,
exactly.
Got it.
But they're wonderful. They're, without them, this wouldn't exist.
Right.
And so
it's almost like they share the vision.
They do.
Yeah.
And they live it, man. I mean, they embody it. But the passion of it all, you go in there and there's these folks and they stand and they sing and they chant and they drum for 90 minutes and you can't sit down and it just kind of adds, it's contagious, man. And it's we didn't plan on drawing that many folks, you know, originally. The first plan was like, hey, let's get 3,000 in there. And we were going to play at what is now our stadium at Pop Murray's Park. It was Bonnie Field. And construction was running behind, and so like we got to find a place to play. So Hughes was available. Hughes is 21,000 seats.
Yeah,
and we're like, oh man, we were planning on 3,000 or 4,000 people.
Look empty.
It's gonna look like shit, you know. And so one thing led another. Hey, we're gonna play at Hughes, and we had a plan. It was a long shot to get to 10,000. And so it was probably three weeks to a month before opening day, inaugural day, 2014. And Warren had just come back from a speaking gig. He's like, hey, how are we pacing at 20,000? I go, what the hell are you talking about? I go, we're busting our ass to get to 10. He goes, I just gave a speech and told the B that
we're doing 20.
We're going to do 20. and I'm sitting there with a room of all our folks, And he leaves and just like, you guys will figure it out. And we're kind of like, oh my God, what do we do? And you know, it was the hardest working group of folks that I've ever been around and still today. And we found a way. The 21,000 people, our first match, second match, third match, and the fourth match, where there was like 17,000. It was,
oh my goodness.
So, but the energy in that thing, it was just, I'd never seen anything like it. But this is something that the people of Sacramento created. I mean, when we went out with it, I think one of the reasons why it has become what it is because we were very, I think, very transparent. We don't come from the soccer world. We know how to run sports teams. We know how to market. We know how to communicate. We know how to sell. But we don't know what you want. And so you got to help us create it. In fact, you have to create it. So we had a name the team contest. You know, people submitted what they like about Sacramento and eventually with the help of Augustine Associates, an ad agency that kind of put the vision of what we were putting together, like, you know, need actual graphic artists and stuff like that. Yeah. It got brought to life and, it's of the people. I mean, it's the city's team and we're very, very open about that. Like if people want to come and scream at us, I mean, people know where we work and they do, you know, if they want to come and have a beer, we'll have a beer. If they want to come and let us know that we're the worst people in the world, which does happen sometimes. Hey man, I'll listen. You know, we'll listen. Ben, our president will listen. Everyone will listen.
What could someone get mad at you about?
Oh, you'd be surprised. Beer prices. Beer really? Prices. Yeah. It's
how much is a beer?
You can get a beer for $6, but they also go well north of that. It's a concessionaire deal, and so sometimes we don't necessarily set the prices.
It's just lease the license.
Yeah, and so, our concessionaire folks are they're good people, but they also have they have to charge certain prices.
For they got to make a buck,
and so but. When people want to come and yell at us about beer prices, we'll either commiserate or empathize or, you know, try to explain where it's coming from. But we're there, and it's the people's team, and we try to adjust as much as we can.
Shouldn't yell at them for not sneaking a flask in their.
Well, you know, you'd be surprised what we find.
Like a regular fold.
You'd be surprised what we find, man. You'd be surprised.
Yeah. So, it sounds like you had to like move around quite a bit to pursue this dream of working in professional sports management.
Yeah.
It's almost like being a player.
Yeah. But without the groupies, you know, it's a player
with zero groupies.
Yeah. Zero groupies. But you know, it's, you have to look for the next opportunity. And, you know, I was in Sioux Falls and, you know, that was great. It was a, you know, small baseball team. And it's all of a sudden, hey, there's this big one. And if you want to evolve, I mean, I actually probably would have been happy staying there forever if the GM would have left, but the GM didn't leave. And so it's like, okay, how do I grow? Well, I'm going to go and learn from these people that are doing it better than anybody else in the country. And I'm going to, although I'm running this place pretty much, I'm going to go and be, you know, right around an entry level position again. But as long as I was a sponge and listened and learned, and I actually, you know, had to run a club, so I could actually understand a little bit more about how my role lived and the importance of it to every other department in there. Yeah. So,
on average, you moved every couple of years, every year.
So it was 4 years in Sioux Falls, three in Sacramento, quick jaunt back, another three with the Rivercats. Two in Peoria, Illinois, one in Kane County, Illinois, one in Modesto, but we lived in Sacramento. And then two seasons with the Mountain Lions, one season with the hockey team, and now we're going on season five with the Republic, man.
Yeah.
And it's my longest gig, but I wouldn't have it any other way. It's been a dream come true. It's heartbreak. It's elation. It's everything. It's like the sport.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of heartbreak, this MLS bid.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be totally upfront with you.
Sure.
Too. I'm not really a soccer guy.
Okay.
I'm not really a soccer guy. I just didn't grow up with it. I didn't grow up watching it. I'm a fight guy.
Right.
I'll watch two people fight under any rules for any contest.
Sure. You know? Well, then soccer is certainly not your thing.
Yeah.
If you want to pretend again,
I'll watch, man, I'll watch eighth graders fight over lunch money.
That's fantastic.
You know, karate, sumo, anything, you know.
Sure.
And actually, you know, not to get too sidetracked, but I'd love to pick your brain on why the fighting world can't work better as a business, because it's, you know, the model is just so broken, right?
I know.
If you look at like the fractured model of like the boxing landscape, there's like 30 different promotions, right? And so the lack of like a unifying league.
Right.
You know, means that you can't get the fights on time.
Yeah.
You know, like Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather don't fight until Manny's so old. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But speaking of heartbreak, the MLS bid, we didn't get it.
Right. So we haven't got it yet.
We haven't got it yet.
And so.
Okay. So talk me through.
Yeah.
Talk me through, what are they looking for? What's the process of preparing for one? What distinguishes an MLS team between a USL team, and what does that mean for the city to get an MLS team?
MLS, when we came in 2014, the thought was, well, they're looking for new markets, and they were saying, hey, we need a downtown urban stadium, you need a proven fan base, you need a season ticket base of right around 3,000 season tickets that quickly jumped up to 5,000 season tickets.
What are you guys at?
We're north of 7, you know. So it's
like check.
Right? Yeah. And that's just fulls when you figure deposits and like we could get 10 tomorrow if there was an announcement. That wouldn't be a problem. And we'd go way north of 10,000. And then so you got your stadium, you got your market, but you need some money. You need
like some serious cash,
close to a billionaire. And we went into it, and yeah, there was, hey, Sacramento's shooting for MLS. I mean, it's certainly Warner and I were not the money people, you know, it's, we were the sweat people. And so, which I'm proud of, you know, hey, yeah, worked into the deal just because you'll bust your ass, which is great. So Hughes Games, 21,000, wonderful. There also in 2013, when we actually released the brand, there's this video called The Chant made by Franklin Pictures. And that kind of rolled out our brand. And there's an MLS executive and his kid's like, hey, Dad, have you seen this video? And he's like, no, what are you talking about? And it was a video that was made for our launch. Okay, so fast forward 9 months and we have our first game. It's 21,000 people, another 21,000. We're outdrawing Major League Soccer teams.
Yeah.
And now MLS is interested. So they actually come to town. There's Mark Abbott, who is the deputy commissioner of Major League Soccer, came to Sacramento at the end of 2014. If I was Joe Fan, and here's this thing that's blowing up, and it happened in other markets, and it happened very quick in some other markets, I would be thinking, hey, this is going to happen pretty soon. And, you know, you get some renderings made, like, here's where a stadium could be. Here's what it could look like.
It starts taking on a life of its own.
And so, and it did. And it was real, and it still is real. But that was 2014. So 2015. And also, we won the championship in 2014. So it was like, it was just sun, moon, stars. I mean, you couldn't have, it was a movie. People wouldn't have believed it.
Yeah.
2015, MLS, hey, they were saying it could probably happen. Major League Soccer was saying it could happen. At this point, our current lead investor, Kevin Nagel, had got involved actually halfway through the 2014 season, but he's the guy. I mean, at some point it had to be bigger money. And Kevin is bigger. He's big money.
How do you make his money? What's his deal?
Pharmaceuticals, but he's branched into other things like film.
He's a conglomerate, yeah.
Yeah, but he's Sacramento. He's also the largest minority. He's the largest local investor of the Kings.
Got it.
So he's branched out to a bunch of things, but most of it's supporting Sacramento.
Very cool.
Yeah, good.
I always wondered how we were on billionaires in town.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, exactly. So 15, MLS. 16, MLS, right? You know, and then 17, Don Garber, the commissioner of Major League Soccer, came out. And so, I mean, he's there on a stage saying, hey, it's not if, but when. And you could see all these things happening. And again, I'd be really excited too if actually, I think that was 2016. I take it back a year. So 16, Garber's here. 17, MLS, you know, and there've been a couple things along the way where we went and presented and things looked real favorable, but the goalposts keep getting pushed a little bit further back. And so let's say if the buy-in was $75 million in 2014 or $50 million as a franchise, a expansion fee, you know, you're at $150 million now. You know, with a stadium that might've been $150 million in 2014, now you're talking, who knows, like $200 million, $225 million, $250 million.
Yeah. These football stadiums are like a billy.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, what could have been done with a couple big money people now we need to get more big money people. And so I can tell you now we're closer. I got to be careful how I say this, you know. Yeah. We're closer than we've ever been. It is certainly not dead by any stretch of the imagination. If you were to read the tea leaves of what we're doing as an organization, pardon me, we hired like 6 new people 2 months ago. We're hiring 4 new people. We just got a new vice president actually from the Kings. There are very talented and sophisticated people joining our team. Started with Ben Gumper, who came on as when the ownership switch happened. He came on a little over a year ago. But you know, you start bringing in these major league folks, and there's more and more coming on, and there's a lot of things happening that if you were to look at a way a USL team runs versus the way an MLS team runs, you would look at that, and one could think that we were getting ready for an MLS announcement. Now,
got it.
Nothing secure. But you know, there's three groups, and one of them's really close. And in this day of, you know, a non-disclosure agreement, so you can only say so much. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't even know that much, and that's good because I'm an oversharer. You know, that's a good thing. But I think the reason, there's a couple things where I think it's become heartbreak. You know, hey, heartbreak. One, it's been 5 seasons. You know, we're going on. Hey, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. I mean, there is some fatigue that's going to happen. On top of that, when you looked at the way the Kings process happened, everything was out in the public. Like, hey, here's this owner and they're in town. Here's this owner, they're in town. Oh, it's an arena deal. Oh, it's going to happen. Hey, you know, KJ's going to New York and they're going to make a pitch. Like, they're, it was very out in the open. Whereas, and that probably helped and hurt in some respect. This one's being done very discreetly.
Close to the chest.
Yeah. And the downside is you get your ass kicked in the process. People don't think it's happened, or, you know, there
they
was
think a beat. You've gotten complacent.
Yeah. Or right. Or they're not into it anymore. Or the worst ones, hey, they're just leading us along and telling us it's going to happen so they can keep getting the renewals, the season ticket renewals. It's like they could not, it just couldn't be further from the truth. And just the deal where, if we're kind of damned if we do and damned if we don't right now, where if we talk about it, it's, you're leading us on. But I mean, I firmly believe it's going to happen. But if we don't talk about it and it does, it's like, well, why didn't you tell me this was going to happen? Because I would have held on to
my tickets.
To my tickets. It's a tough spot. Ultimately, I think when history is when the history books are written on this process, it'll be, thank God it was a close to the vest process, because that's why it was able to get done. And yeah, people were pretty frustrated for 2 or 3 years, and we've been called everything in the book, but that led to what everyone was ultimately hoping for. And I think, you know, much like winning solves everything, that announcement will immediately wipe everything clear. And I honestly think that's what's going to happen.
So it's been 5 years, and you mentioned there's been some fatigue. What is the process like from the inception of a USL team to taking it to the MLS? What's that arc usually take? And when do people give up? Like,
so there was a team in Rochester, New York, and I forget how many years ago, it was probably 10, 15 years ago, but it was, hey, you guys are next. You guys are next. And everyone got excited about it. And they were probably, some would think, used to leverage other markets. Like, hey, you're not going to get your, if you don't get your stadium done, we're going to go to Rochester. If you don't get your stadium done, we're going to go to Rochester.
Right.
Some are looking at this being that, Sacramento being used as that piece. And it's not. The process is really, you start a team, which we did. You know, you get in the USL, you start playing, and all of a sudden there is a lead investor. And in our case, it is Kevin Nagel. And you go and you make a pitch to Major League Soccer and you say, hey, here's what we think we can do. Here's the money for the expansion fee. Here's the stadium. And the thing that really kind of keeps us up at night is, in all these other markets that are getting named, the stadium is the sticking point. It's like either there was a city council vote that didn't go the way they thought it was going to go, or they really didn't have rights to the land, or that it's going to be way more expensive than they thought, and it was publicly funded. Ours is privately funded. And it's already been voted on. Like, it's ready to go. We already started working on the land.
Environmental review is done.
Everything's there, man. And we're going like, holy shit, like, we've got the fan base easily checked. We've got the stadium checked. And now it's just finding the right mix of owners that...
what's the perceived slide on the current ownership group, and what does a new ownership group need to bring to the table?
You know, I think
like it, just more money, or do they have to be?
Yeah, no, it's money, and you know, it's certainly. I mean, Kevin Nagel
Nagel, you're not rich enough.
Well, no, he's a big money guy, but you know,
like a commitment, right?
Yeah, like right. Say, how much of
how your, much commitment?
How much do you want to throw in? And so it's better to have partners in areas like that, and so. That's why we went out and looked to increase the ownership.
So team. Who do you go out and lobby for this sort of thing? It's like, hey, do you have $75 million?
You know, it's certainly not me.
Is that your job?
Not my job at all. Okay. You know, I think, you know, Kevin works in those circles. You know, he knows those folks. Ben Gumper, our president, spends a lot of time, there, I mean, at any point, I think you mentioned there were like 30 different groups we were talking to.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's a good investment. But looking at, we also got to do what's right for Sacramento. So you could have someone come in that just looks at it as an investment, and but doesn't really have the passion for the city. And so I think part of the vetting process was, hey, who's got money? Who can add to what we already have, which is a very strong ownership team? But who's going to love Sacramento the way that we love Sacramento? And I mean, if it was just a straight money play, that could have been done. But I think the current ownership group and the current lead folks are ultimately doing the right thing by finding the right fit.
Got it. So the pitch is, it, hey, give us $75 million or however much, you'll make your money back right away? Or is it, hey, give us some money, you'll do a great thing for the city?
Well, I think it's, you know, if you're to look at it, just a year over year investment, there's not a lot of Major League Soccer teams that make money. I think there's two that actually make money.
Oh, wow.
But if you look at value franchises, and that's where the value of the
then you eventually sell it, right?
Because you figure what, I don't know, my numbers are off, but let's say 10 million, 10 years ago, they were selling for $50 million or $25 million, an expansion franchise.
Okay.
And now you're getting $150 million. So now what was worth 50 is now worth, if I want to go sell it, this is what it's worth. So now it's worth $150 million. And so, you know, that $2 million a year, whatever it might be, shortfall from a year over year, definitely is made up in the value. And then, you know, in this day and age, it's also about,
well, like, know, in the eventual sale.
Yeah, in the eventual sale, and you know what the value of the whole thing, and also, you know, there's been so much debate about, you know, what's the economic impact of stadiums, and we could sit here for 3 years and debate that.
Yeah.
But when you look at what gets developed around a stadium, and you know, we're looking at the rail yards. I mean, that's where we're going to go, and you know, it's going to double the size of downtown. It's the largest urban infill project in the United States. It's gonna make the whole area blow up, you know. And so, and if you are an owner, do you have a piece in those other things, the other development around the stadium that takes place? Because that's where that could be an ancillary benefit of the whole thing.
So the ownership group now is holding onto the rail yards.
So you've got Larry Kelly, who's a member of the ownership team. He's
holding onto the rail
yards. He controls the rail yards, and so he's in. Like, we got everything there. It's just a matter of. The new potential investors and our current investors finding the right mix and who puts in what, and then eventually we show up at Major League Soccer and say, hey, we've got your expansion fee, we've got everything that you've asked for, let's go, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And you write them a check and you start building a stadium and you play about 2 years later. And that's obviously pretty layman's term way, and I don't think I overshared there, but that's kind of how it happens.
Yeah. You know, with regards to the stadium thing, I'm a little bit torn because, yeah, the rail yards are going to develop because that's when the owner started developing them. Like, if it was just left, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say, like, if it was just left to the free market, if that land was for sale, maybe it would have developed earlier had it been allowed to be developed, right? Same thing with, like, the arena downtown, right?
Right, right.
It's like, oh, look at all this development that's happened. Well, yeah, the city master planned it, and you guys blocked long-term leases on K Street, and it wasn't allowed to develop because you were waiting on this thing to anchor it, and now you're going to act like, oh, it's all just coming. Well, no, it didn't. Like, that was the plan, right?
Sure.
But that also means, like, in that whole time period that you were just holding on to it, you stifled a lot of opportunity for a lot of people. You know, the other thing that kind of gets me with the stadium thing too is, like, I feel like the conversation around it isn't super honest. Like, if you're trying to justify a stadium simply financially for a city, like, I don't believe that pencils out, and I don't think that you should be, that anybody should be in the business of trying to hey, look, this is we're gonna get our money back. You're probably not gonna. In my heart of hearts, I don't think you're gonna get your money back. But why not say, hey, this helps bring people together, this helps build city pride, this helps us create a shared identity as Sacramentans, and isn't that worth a little bit of money?
Right.
You're like, well, you know, why are you trying to act like this thing's gonna pay? It's not gonna pay for itself. It's a giant fucking building shaped like a donut.
Right. And you know, you know, and then, you know, is it your money versus the city's money is a whole other thing. You know, in our case, it's private money. So someone's like, hey, you know, shit, if you're willing to throw it down.
Yeah.
And
okay, so there's no city funding for this thing?
There was funding that was put into the development of the area. So, you know,
got it.
Before it was just land, and now there's streets and there's street lights and
okay, you know, so it's like redevelopment.
So there's some infrastructure there.
Okay,
but as far as like building the damn thing, I mean there's no ask from the city. Much different than a Golden One, and that is not my expertise. I'm probably going down a path where I'm going to get myself in trouble. But I do think it matters if I'm a citizen of Sacramento.
Yeah.
Is it use my money or not? Because if someone else wants to come in and pay for it, holy shit, yeah, please and thank you. And and then all the other things that are gonna blossom around it. There's a medical center that's going into the rail yards. There's gonna be obviously housing and retail
it could be gorgeous.
It's gonna be great. Yeah. And I firmly believe it's gonna be great. But you're right. If you're just looking at numbers and numbers, hey, how are you selling it to me versus are you being transparent? There's games that are played in every market.
Yeah. Just like the gamesmanship of it. It's like, yeah, did the city spend a bunch of money on Golden One Arena? Yeah. Am I happy for what it's doing to our identity as a whole? Yeah. So is that worth, is that investment worth it? There's this whole idea that government has to be ran as a business and we have to make our dollars, make our money back and all that. That's all bullshit. Like, government isn't a business. Why would you compare it to a business? Why would you say like, we're going to make this investment? We're going to invest it. Like, there's some things that you make investments in and you never get the money back. And that's okay. Like taking care of dogs and the elderly making sure there's no like stray dogs and cats and in the streets and stuff like that.
And how do you value that? Is it on paper or is it a feeling or is it, 20 years down the road, hey, this company wouldn't have come here if this city wasn't, or if this stadium wasn't built. I mean, we just secured a Fortune 500. Yeah. Like shit.
I don't know if I pronounced that right.
I don't either. Yeah. But I'm sure someone could make an argument like, hey, if there was a rotting arena on the outside of town versus nice place downtown, did that help draw a Fortune 500 company? And not to mention they're going to the spot, I believe, where the old Power Balance Arco.
Is that where they're going?
I think it's the Thomas. So I believe it's
North of Thomas. That would make sense.
Yeah.
Just looking at the plot of land.
Yeah. So I believe, there's the, hey, here's a stadium. Here's what it's paid for. Here's, economic impact between, sales tax and the business around it. But then you bring in, 5,000 new jobs to a city and you bring a headquarters there in a Fortune 500 company. Like there's, I believe down the road you look at that. Maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't, but there's a lot more that goes into that conversation.
Right. A lot of these conversations are happening together in tandem, right? Like
absolutely.
They're Centene or however you pronounce it, coming to Sacramento because they believe that big things are happening here, right?
Yep.
Also because we're at the right intersection of sort of quality of life and affordability.
Totally.
Bay Area people don't come here, it sucks.
Don't
come here and fuck up my housing prices. Like
no, I know. In San Francisco. It's been again, moving here in 2002. Yeah. Watching the evolution,
house in Land Park for $250,000.
Yeah, man, it's fascinating. But it's been such a joy to be a part of. And then you look at how the Republic plays into the whole thing, and it's really the city's first homegrown team. The Rivercats came from Vancouver, Kings came from Kansas City, but this was homegrown, and I think that's another reason why. People look at it, they look at our crest, they look at what it is and go, that represents me, and those 11 guys on the field, they bust their ass and they represent me. And I'm proud to be a part of that.
So cool.
To pull that off, to pull this off, pull the Republic off in 2002 would have been a much different story than it is when it was in 2014.
So let me ask you, given the team here, the team was your idea. Right.
Yeah. I mean, so
you had a co-founder, but like from what everything I've read,
I guess I wrote the plan along with Brett, and then, Jared kicking the ball and Sean. Like, there's a bunch of avenues that took it there, but ultimately, I'd write the plan and go.
Can anybody more credibly than you say it was my idea?
No.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So you're the co-founder, right? So when you present this to investors, do you get an equity stake? Do you just get to have the word co-founder by your name? Like, if that's sensitive, that's fine.
No, it's
like, do you have to like give up your baby? Like,
no, this, much like in, I
does
guess
your
like,
stake get bought out over
I,
time?
I can compare it to other businesses. There's, the sweat equity model is pretty common. I'm sweat and I'm going to get X. I'm not going to throw in, but I've been working on this for 3 years for $0 and I'm going to leave my job and we're going to go for it. And we're not going to get paid until there's actually investors that come in. There's clearly obviously a value to that. So although you didn't throw in, you know, cash, you definitely, it wouldn't have happened without you.
Right.
And there's value to that. And so you got your equity guy, your sweat folks, and then you do need to go obviously raise money. And, you know, it's A shares, B shares, voting versus non-voting. And yeah, there's an upside to it. There's an upside to the whole thing. And
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No. You know, I never thought that, you know, working in sports back in, you know, when I got in 98, like I made $11,000, you know, before taxes. You're like, holy shit, this is, and I loved it, you know, and like, you never thought somewhere down the line, you might be able to, you know, put yourself in a better situation.
Yeah. I
mean, back then it was, hey man, come work here. You're going to make 11 grand if you do a great job before taxes. But at any point in time, we owned our own concessions. You could come and you could have whatever you want. 12 months a year, we kept frozen hot dogs. And you could go, you had a key to the holding, you go and you could make yourself food any day, any time of the day, 12 months a year at this concession stand. But the cooler thing was you could go, you had key to the lights. And so you could be at a bar at like 1:30 in the morning and hang out with a bunch of people like, hey, you want to go take batting practice? They're like, what? You jump in a cab and go to the ballpark and turn on the lights and take batting practice and you open a concession stand, have a couple pops.
Just kind of hang out on the field.
Yeah, and it was great. So cool. It was like, that was awesome. You know, that wouldn't pay the bills now, but that was a blast.
Yeah.
So back then I never imagined that A, I'd be working in soccer, or B, that it could somewhat put us in a better situation. So
very cool. Yeah. So does the new ownership group, or like, and if I'm prying too much, that's fine.
Sure.
But does the new ownership group ever like insist like, you've got to give up your share? Like, we need to buy all these people out, or say like, well, actually we feel more comfortable with you vested in it since you're kind of,
you know,
like,
I probably can't go down that road.
That's fair.
But you know, the way Major League Soccer set up, there does need to be a person,
like someone in charge.
Yeah, there does need to be a person. So it isn't like, hey, let's share authority. It doesn't work that way. There needs to be a guy or a lady. You know, we're still there. I'm still there. But you know, Kevin Nagel is our lead investor, and you know what, and that's how we get to Major League Soccer. At some point, it would have had to change hands. No matter what, I think we're just, you know.
So when Nagel finds the other investors, he's still the head of the ship.
He will,
unless he finds someone else to,
you know,
take the whole
there's thing, a couple, like, ways that could work out. I don't know exactly how. Yeah. I mean, he will absolutely be involved. He'll either be the guy or co-guy, or he's gonna be. His fingerprints are all over it. He will, you know, he'll be the guy that got us to Major League Soccer.
Yeah.
And so
I see Steinberg like in the photos, like with the scarf and stuff like
that.
Like, what sort of role does he have in all this?
Well, a lot.
Mayor Steinberg, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, Mr. Mayor, your invite to the show is still open. Every couple of months, I send this guy an email.
Really?
Like, hey, is he ready to come on now?
He's a busy guy.
Yeah, I'll get him on eventually.
Well, you know, the mayor is the best salesperson for our city, you know. And so he plays a big part in it. You know, you need we went to city council. I mean, he wasn't the mayor then, but you need to be able to go into a, you know, city hall and hey, here's what we're thinking about doing. Does that work? And have someone in your corner. And then, hey, when it's time for the commissioner of Major League Soccer to come and say, hey, is the city behind this? The mayor goes, yep. And here's how, you know, here's how we're committed to supporting this thing. And, you know, there's been plenty of cities throughout the United States where the money was there, but the city either voted against it or wasn't in favor. I mean, there's just a vote went down in St. Louis. A vote didn't work out in San Diego.
For the Chargers?
There was a preliminary deal on a soccer stadium. They're going to revisit it. But if you don't have the city fully in your corner, it makes it a much, you know, higher mountain to climb.
Got it. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, brother. We're getting close to an hour here. We're getting close to 50 minutes. You brought notes. Thank you for preparing.
It's over 5 years. Like, so much stuff's happened. It's like, I just, you know, when it comes time to how to get started. Like, shit, I got to make
sure. Is there anything we haven't covered?
No. It's been a fun conversation. There's a lot that we do, you know, and you know, it's hard to all fit into an hour. But
yeah.
Have you been out to have you been out to a game?
I know I've not been out to the game just because I'm not a soccer guy. You know? I'll have to come to one. But
Well, you do. I mean, it's it really is when you go and look at you sit in the stadium, you look around. I mean, it really is a true representation of what Sacramento is and who Sacramento is. It's and again, I don't think you get that other places. And I think we. You know, making my pitch to why I think you should come out. You know, we believe in the city. We believe in equality. We believe in treating your fellow people right. You know, we have things like we had a World Refugee Night. You know, where hey, we embrace these folks. They're Sacramentans. These are our people. We have Equality Night. We have we get involved in on a number of fronts. But ultimately, we're kind of like going back to why it got started. I mean, we all shared the same space, and we believe that everybody's equal. Everyone deserves to be treated with respect. And if we can do something to help promote that, or even you know, open people's minds, I can start you know viewing folks a different way. Then I think we've done our job. You won't see you'll see fake fights in soccer. You'll see people fall down that might not necessarily get hit.
Yeah, what is that? That whole part of the cultural landscape has to leave soccer.
Being a baseball guy, you know, where even if you get drilled, you don't rub it. You know, you don't rub it. If you get hit really hard at bat, you're running down to first. Don't rub it. Yeah. Whereas if someone sticks out their leg and I pretend to fall down, you know. In this sport, you know, if you're within, they call it the 18, but if you're close to the goal and you fall down, you get a free kick. And I mean, or a penalty kick. And
so you got to sell it.
And that could win the game. And so it's like, okay, is the getting my.
The shame
of being a flopper versus the glory of winning by a goal and being that guy. It's a mix. You know, I was watching the World Cup and, you know, France. You had more eyes on a game than any time in history, and they were flopping all over the place. Like that is not a good representation of what the sport truly is. No, it's not good
for TV either, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah. But it is. You know, these guys run some like 7 or 9 miles every 90 minutes that they play. I didn't get it until we started looking at the physicality and how much they run, and then the shape these folks are in. And then I started to realize, like, wow, these guys really do beat the shit out of each other over 90 minutes. And they do run. And I was a first baseman and a pitcher. Not a lot of running, you know? And
I almost feel like, you know, baseball, I almost feel like it's more like a game. Like,
well, you know, my wife, she's like, were you an athlete? We started dating, she's like, you're an athlete? I'm like, yeah. She's like, what do you, I was a first baseman. She's like, no, I asked if you were an athlete. I'm like, no, that doesn't count, man. Come on. First baseman are people, too.
That's an important base, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's like the most important base, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, you know, it's a great thing about soccer. It's truly a world sport, right? Like, you know, the World Cups comes around or, like, these international matches come around. Oh. I mean, you know, in a lot of ways, it's like fighting. People understand that. You know, like you try to sell American football in you know, in Morocco, or try to put American football on TV. And,
right.
You know, it's just like, I don't get it. What's going on here?
You throw it through people. Now, does boxing resonate in all countries, or is it it would be more of an MMA deal, or does it like?
Yeah, boxing is unfortunately the history of how boxing has been promoted. Has like a lot of kind of ugly like racial undertones.
Sure.
Absolutely. So, you know, like the whole Great White Hope thing, you know, we got to get a white guy to bring the championship back to, you know, to white hands. Promoters love to pit like Filipino boxers against Mexicans. And so it was like a big like, but you know, for some reason, despite our current reckoning with nationalism and nationalism as identity, that's really deeply within us, because that's been a wonderful model for selling boxing fights. I mean, you know, they'll have like the Russian against, you know, someone from East Germany or something like that. Boxing's very universal. You know, mixed martial arts is more and more really universal. And that's one of the only sports where, you know, soccer is another sport like this, where it's like, hey, you win like the world championship. That's an actual world championship.
Right.
You know, like the UFC has scouts in Armenia, in Dagestan. Right. They've got someone in Brazil with a walkie-talkie in a favela saying, hey, this guy can fight.
Right.
You know, great, pull him out, you know, bring him to the Performance Institute. Like, let's.
Sure.
So when you win a world champ, that is an actual world sport. Same like soccer, right? You know, it's like the World Series of Baseball is, you know, it's an American championship.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely.
You know, and then there's other little things too, like grappling is super interesting. So
right.
The Abu Dhabi Combat Grappling Club, ADCC, is this like sheikh in Saudi Arabia, will hold these trials on every continent across all the different weight classes. And the winner of all the trials, I think it's like I think up to third place in North America, and then they take two from South America, and they take like three from Europe. But if you win a qualifying spot in the trial, the sheikh will fly you out to Saudi Arabia.
You're kidding me.
To like fight in this like submission grappling tournament for him. It happens every 2 years because 1 year is the qualifying trials,
right?
And the next year is the, you know.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and first place is like 40 or 80 grand or something, you know, for grappling. So, it's interesting, man. Like there's it definitely has like an international flavor to it, you know, especially with like grappling is basically just like an umbrella term for fighting somebody by grabbing hold of them.
Right.
You know, like there's two forms of fighting people. You're either grabbing a hold of them or hitting them.
Sure.
If you're hitting them, you're striking. If you're grabbing a hold of them, you're grappling.
Yeah.
So under grappling, you have like Greco-Roman wrestling, you have American folk style wrestling, you have judo, you have Brazilian jiu-jitsu. The Russians do a variant called Sambo.
Okay.
But so like the World Grappling Championships, ADCC, is just like, all right, strip away all the rules. The only rules, you can't hit each other, you know?
That's it.
That's it.
I choke you out, though.
You can choke them out any way that you can think of.
I just can't hit you.
Yeah, you know, you can crank on someone's neck, whatever.
Sure.
You know? And then it's kind of cool to watch all the different you know, like you got like a Mongolian judo guy.
Yeah,
in one
corner,
you got
like a sumo. No, that's
super cool, you know?
No.
These world sports, man, I mean, we got really, you know, like... I got Gabe, my buddy Gabe. I haven't heard from him since football started, you know.
Sure, that happens. That happens. yeah.
And he got really mad at me because I dropped out of the fantasy league.
Oh, no.
It just wasn't a priority for me.
I get it.
I just don't have the time.
It's a lot to keep up on, man.
It's a lot to keep up on. Yeah. It is. You know, it wasn't the buy. I told him I couldn't afford the buy-in, but that's not true. Yeah, it's just a lot to keep up
on. Yeah, no,
you know?
I get it.
And you have to like wake up early on Sundays to make
it. Totally. Who's hurt? Who's not? The whole thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm not waking up early on Sundays to play this stupid game, you know. But yeah, I think that is one thing that I really have always understood about soccer. And I joined a soccer league, a little Zoso league.
Yeah.
Like 2 years ago, I just wanted to make new friends and branch out and stuff. And though I might not necessarily like watch a lot of soccer just because I didn't grow up with it. Oh my God, what a fun game to play. Like if you're able to run around and like, man. You know, like meet friends and kind of hang out on the side of the field with, you know, when you're not playing and meet new people. It's really great community building.
Absolutely.
You know?
So you got to come check it out, man.
I'm going to come.
Come on.
Haley and I are going to come check it out.
Please do.
Yeah.
Please do.
Well, all right, brother. I think that's a pretty good, place to end it. For folks who are not already following Sac Republic, where can they follow them on Twitter or social media?
Twitter, so it's sacrepublicfc.com.
On everything.
And very cool. But yeah, we're Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
Cool.
The other ones. Yeah. The
other ones. Where can folks find you?
So as far as like Mimi?
Yeah, like on Twitter.
So I'm Wagner with an O, because it's everyone spells Wagner W-A-G-N-E-R, and I'm W-A-G-O-N-E-R. So I'm Wagner with an O.
Joe, don't forget the
yeah, exactly. On Twitter, just Joe Wagner on Facebook. But tell you what, we've got three games left. We've got three games left in the season. Four from the standings. Prime time was a playoff match. And come and check us out, man.
Very
come
cool.
and check us
Very
out.
Cool. We'll be there. All right, brother. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.